Blog Talk Radio.
Minutes of close in action from kickoff to touchdown. This is pro football, the sport of our time.
I always loved that clip from LT, so I wanted to play it twice. All right, guys, well, welcome to another Tuesday night edition of the NFL Recap. That's right, where your host, Jeff Towinski, and I sit back for 60 minutes and bring you all of the biggest storylines, stats, highlights from the past week's NFL show, for NFL games. So we're glad that you had this Tuesday night for all of the fun. There'll be plenty to get to. I'm waiting for Jeff to pop up right now. But in the meantime, I'll get a little business done. And let me just switch over this little second. Anyway, so guys, welcome to another edition of the NFL Recap here at Hard Rocket Sports, live Tuesday nights from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time. And this episode of the NFL Recap and all episodes of the NFL Recap are sponsored by our dear friends at RFL Records. Guys, RFL Records is at the forefront of the hard rock and metal scene. This is a label that brings you such great bands, bands like Silk Nine, Hydrogen, After the Fall, Fear, right now coming out of Canada, Livesay, The Black Knots. Such great bands tied to this label. So much great music coming down the pike from them. And there's much more to get to. There's much more happening at RFL Records that I could even spend the next hour going over. And especially pay attention this Friday. That's right, this Friday, the album Chronicles drops in, as the industry uses that term, drops this Friday, Chronicles, on the RFL label from Livesay. Great album. I've listened to it. I've played, and we've debuted International Man here on the show a couple weeks back with Greg Livesay, Mike Gill, and John Marhefka on the phone with us. So we're big fans of guys at RFL Records, and we appreciate them sponsoring this and all episodes of the Tuesday night NFL recap show here on the Hard Rocket Sports channels. Don't forget about Wednesday nights, Mike Passamonte, Carl Graham with the Pass the Mic show every Wednesday night, 6 to 8 live on the channels. And, of course, the mothership, the show that started it all, Thursday night, 6:30 to 9:30, Hard Rocket Sports live Thursday nights with your more fair and balanced. I'm going to steal that from Fox News. Fair and balanced. We do a lot of metal, hard rock music. We get into the world of sports. So a lot to get to all week long on the Hard Rocket Sports channel, and more stuff coming your way. But guys, we got to kick off this episode because it's only 60 minutes, but I can't get started without doing this. So guys, welcome to another edition of Hard Rocket Sports NFL Recap, hosted by none other than Mr. Jeff Towinski. Jeff, welcome aboard, brother.
What's up, man? What's going on?
Not much, man. Just another Tuesday night. A lot of football from the weekend. Plenty of stuff to talk about. It's your show. I turn the mic over to you.
What's going on, man? How was your week so far?
Jeff, my week is okay. 2 days in, tired, and looking forward to tonight, and then I'm looking forward to Thursday.
Oh, you're always looking forward to Thursday, man. Can't wait.
Absolutely, yeah. How about yourself, Jeff? The week flying by for you?
Not really. It started on Sunday. It's going to go straight through to Friday, it looks like. So it's going to be a long week. I got to work Friday, so.
Oh, wow.
It is what it is, but.
I mean, you're off the weekend? Did you get a Saturday, Sunday at that point?
No, just Saturday. Oh. I did 13 hours Sunday, so it is what it is. Make a little extra money.
There you go. There you go. Another base in the future, maybe.
Yeah, but right now we're here to talk.
You've got
football,
mail. Yeah, that's it. We got a lot of football to get to. So take it away. It's your show.
All right. Well, started off Thursday night with the Rams and the Vikings, with Goff 26-33, 465 yards, 5 touchdowns. This kid is proven to be the real deal to me. I know his first year he wasn't so good, but ever since he is 2-3, this guy's been incredible. He got one sack, the ground game, 20 rushes, 100 yards, but no touchdowns. Three receivers topped 100 yards in that Rams on the Rams side of that game. And the Vikings, Cousins wasn't bad, 36-50, 422, 3 touchdowns, 4 sacks, though, no ground game. And two receivers topped 100 yards for the Vikings, but they spread the ball around to 10 receivers. Tom, what do you think when you see a stat like that, when they hit 9 receivers, 10 receivers a game? Are they spreading the ball, or you think it's desperation?
No, I like it, Jeff, to be honest with you. I mean, listen, every team wants to have that stud. You want to have that big play guy. But I always think it's a good thing that you don't sit back and rely and you don't give the defense a target. I think it confuses the defense more. So I do like when the ball's spread around. But I want to have that guy I can go to with the big spot.
Yeah, I mean, to me, personally, the way I look at it, I agree with what you're saying, but it seems as though that he's not developing a chemistry with any one receiver. Although we did have two top 100 yards, but when you're throwing for the yardage that these guys threw for, almost over 900 yards, or close to 900 yards between them, you know, you're going to hit a lot of different receivers. Between them, they hit 17 different receivers in this game. It's a lot of players, man.
Yeah, Jeff, this is a should have been a game of two powerhouses in the NFC, but to me it seems like it's the game of two teams going in different directions. I mean, the Rams are 4-0, right? Am I saying that right? 4-0.
Yeah, they're 4-0. Yeah, Vikings are what, 2-2.
I think they're 2-2 at this point. So I mean, you know, I think the Vikings have some big holes. They're the worst pass defense in the league. That does not bode well this in this era of football, when you're the worst pass defense team in the era of passing the football. And I think their offense is, you know, again, they're putting up points. I won't say they're struggling. I'll just say, you know, they either have to outscore their opponent big or they have to start playing a little bit of defense. And that division might have the best defense in football. So, you know, that's an interesting spot right now for that team. So we'll definitely keep an eye on it, Jeff. But, the Rams are a powerhouse. Some people are calling them the next Patriots. I'll refuse to say that at this point. But I will say that they are by far the best team in football right now.
Well, I, unlike you, will go out on a limb and say that they are the next Patriots, simply so that we can get rid of the present Patriots. So,
well,
as far as
although, and by the way, yeah, the Vikings are 1-2-1, not 2-2. They're
1-2-1. Yeah, that's not good, but I am anointing them the next Patriots so that we can get rid of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick once and for all.
Until they win their division 16 years in a row, I'm not anointed, but they are by far the best team in football. I mean, it's early. It's only the quarter pole, but right now they play just enough defense, and they can put points on the board with the best of them.
Yeah, well, you know what, Tom? Let's not spend too much time because there's a couple different things that I got to get to tonight and get off my chest. I don't know about you, but let's go over to the Cowboys and the Lions. Dak Prescott, 17-27, 255. But the ground game was working like a you wouldn't believe, man. 35 rushes, 183 yards, no touchdowns, but Elliott, 25 for 152, 4 receptions, 88 yards with a touchdown. On the Lions side, you got Stafford, 24 of 30, excellent passing there, 307 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he got 3 sacks. The ground game, 20 for 96, a touchdown, and Golden Tate, 8 receptions, 132 yards. Even though the Lions lost, they're starting to play competitively. And Dallas, we both had reservations about Dallas. But what do you think? You think that either one of these teams is going to turn it around now at this point in the season and possibly contend for a playoff spot?
Well, I mean, if Dallas can run the ball, I mean, first off, that division is terrible. I mean, I watched the Eagles get a couple weeks in a row. They're not a great team. The Giants stink. The Redskins stink. And if the Cowboys can run the football like they did, I mean, he had 152 yards rushing. They're going to be a tough team to beat if they don't have to rely on the passing game. Detroit, Jeff, surprisingly, had a chance to win. They were up 24-23 with 2:17 left. You know, Matt Patricia has not done a great job defensively. Maybe it's a talent. Matthew Stafford in the offense. Matthew Stafford had a 131 passer rating. I mean, unreal. That offense is going to carry that team. I still don't believe in either team, but I'll give the nod to Dallas if they can keep running the ball the way they did.
You know what I find amazing with the Lions? That they got a defensive-minded coach, but they seem to be more of an offensive-minded team.
So far,
I think that Patricia would have tried to beef up the defensive side of the ball, but not for nothing. In New England, that defense was a good defense, but it was the offense that carried the Patriots to me. So going to be curious to see if he follows the same formula over there in Detroit.
I would agree with that.
Speaking of the Patriots, my 38-7 over the Dolphins. Brady, 23 of 35, a pedestrian-like 274 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He didn't get sacked. The ground game was on its game. 40 rushes, 175 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the Dolphins. Where do you even start? Tannehill, 11 for 20, basically 50% for 100 yards, an interception, a sack. The ground, Osweiler even came in. 4 passes, 5 yards, 4 completions, 5 attempts, 35 yards with a touchdown. And the ground game was doing nothing, 18 rushes, 56 yards. I don't think the Dolphins are for real. And I don't think the Patriots, I think the Patriots needed this game at this point in time. But I can't put all my eggs in that Patriots basket for a lot of different reasons. But I don't think that they're going to get the success that they've had in recent years. I just don't see it with them. I think Brady is starting to slow down a little bit.
I tell you what, Jeff. I mean, you know, what I've seen so far is they, at this moment, they're not as good offensive as they have been. Now, does Josh Gordon get into game shape 2 or 3 weeks from now and start spreading the field? Does Julian Edelman come back now, get in game shape? This team could make a big run, and that division is weak. Let's call it what it is. No, neither one of us believed in Miami. So, I mean, they could easily get on a streak and win a bunch of games. Am I all in on the Patriots this year? No, I am not all in on the Patriots. You're right. There is a little slowdown, but I think it has more to do with the fact that Brady does not have the talent around him to exploit a defense like he's had in the past. And defense are the same as they've always been. They'll bend, don't break, and they'll have great weeks and bad weeks. So I don't think I came out of this any more set up than I was.
That this Patriot run is finally over and that this man just retires and goes away, especially as a Jet fan. But the time will tell on that one.
Yep.
But let's move over to speaking of teams that should have contended for the Super Bowl, the Titans versus the Eagles. Last
good
year's
game.
Super Bowl winner. I actually forgot to write down the Eagles' score, but the Titans had 26.
26-23.
I was going to have to say Eagles unknown, but judging by the stats, they won. Mariota, 30 of 43 for 344 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception, 3 sacks. And the ground game wasn't anything special, 22 rushes, 70 yards, but Mariota led the way with 10 of those rushes for 46 yards. Davis, 9 receptions, 161 yards, and a touchdown. But on the Eagles side of the ball, Wentz seems to be picking up where he left off, 33 of 50, 348 yards, 2 touchdowns, took 4 sacks. The ground game was okay, 22 of 117. Ertz and Jeffrey, both over 100 yards. Tom, how successful does Wentz have to be in order to get this Eagles team back into running and be a possible contender again?
Yeah, Jeff, you gave the most telling stat for me. He threw the ball 50 times, and they only put up 23 points. This is an Eagles team that has got some vulnerabilities, Jeff. They don't run the ball as well as they have in the past, but Wentz is getting hit. He got hit. I don't think he got sacked 4 times. He got hit 11 times, and they give up way too many big plays in the secondary. This is an Eagles team that's very vulnerable. They'll hang in there. They may even win their division because everybody else is terrible. But this is a team that's, to me, no lock for the Super Bowl. Big game coming up against the Vikings. Big game. This is a big game for both teams.
Yeah. Oh, well, man. Listen, Basil has jumped in to hang out with me while I'm on the air, of course.
Always welcome, Basil. Jeff, the biggest surprise in that game, Tennessee's 3-1. I mean, there's a team I think has no offense whatsoever. They've managed to come from behind, I think, 2 or 3 straight weeks in a row. And there's a team that is just 3-1 in their division and may just win that division, you know, easy.
Well, they do play in the same division as the Jaguars. I don't know if they're going to – the Jaguars are just going to let them win. But
I agree, you never know.
What's that?
I said, no, you're right. I forgot about the Jags being in that division. So my mistake. Go ahead.
Let's move on to another division.
Yeah.
Division partner of the Titans, the Texans.
Yep.
37-34 over the Colts. Andrew Luck was 40 of 62. I forgot to write down how many yards he threw for, but he had 4 touchdowns and he got hit 4 times. They could not run the ball on Sunday, 17 for 41. No touchdowns on the ground. And Hilton, 4 receptions, 115 yards, but no touchdowns. But Luck seems to be bouncing back a little bit, and maybe those couple years off have helped him. Maybe preserve his career a little bit, maybe keep him fresher in the later on in the season. But speaking of coming back, Deshaun Watson, 29 of 42, 375 yards. He got sacked 7 times, though. You know, that's a lot of sacks in one game.
Yes, and that can't happen. You can't win football games getting beat up like that, and you can't stay healthy in the NFL with that.
No, but surprisingly, they won. They pulled out a squeaker by 3 points, but the ground game was okay, 35 for 119 with a touchdown, and they had 2 receivers that eclipsed 100 yards. Tom, do you think the Texans come back? Do you think the Colts could come back and possibly contend for that division?
Colts, no. Texans got a good enough defense. You know, it's an interesting one side note in that game, Jeff. I don't know how much you follow, but with about 20-something seconds left in the game, the Colts had the ball 4th down. Let's say there was about 4th and 5, I think it was, from their own 43-yard line. Now, think about it. They're on their own 43, under 30 seconds. I'm going to say it was 24 seconds, and they went for it and didn't make it, putting the Texans with one play, basically one good completion, into field goal range, and that's how they lost the game. And when questioned after the game, Frank Reich, the new coach for the Indianapolis Colts, said, "Hey, I don't play for ties. You know, we went for it, didn't get it, and that's how we lost the game." Jeff, listening to that, is that a smart? Let me say, is that a gutsy coach or a dumb coach? In Frank Reich,
I don't think it's a dumb coach, Tom. I think that at this point in time in the season, you would be instilling a little confidence in your team because if they had succeeded and pulled out a win, you're showing the team, you could hype them up a little bit and be like, look what you guys did. You executed the way you were supposed to. Everything was good. We won the game. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, a lot of rah-rah-rah behind that. And
I
you
would
could
agree.
Fire your team up for the next week and say, listen, you know, you just beat Andrew Luck. and you survived 7 sacks. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. You just beat the Texans and J.J. Watt and that defense, not the Colts. I'm sorry. I'm talking about the Colts.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have been a motivator for that team. But
I agree.
You know what?
I like it.
It's a 50-50 chance whenever you line up that something good is going to happen. That's all there is to it.
Yep. I go back to your original question, Jeff, real quick. No, I don't believe in the Texans. I don't think Deshaun Watson's back to where he needs to be. I don't think they run the ball well enough. And defensively, they're okay. I think any other year, maybe, but I think the Jags, maybe the Titans. I'm not throwing them into the pot yet, but I think they are better teams. I think that the Texans are hanging around, but I don't think they're a playoff team this year.
Yeah, I'm waiting for some injuries. It seems as though that team was always fighting through some injuries one way or another, especially J.J. Watt and Clowney. So it's early, and not that you want to see anybody get hurt, but it's almost like, you know, it's expected every year. But let's move on from that game. There's not much going on right now in that division with those teams. So, but a team that maybe a favorite for something this year, the Packers, destroyed the Bills. Totally destroyed the Bills. Rodgers, 22 of 40 for 298 yards, a touchdown and an interception, 2 sacks. The rushing game was unbelievable, 32 carries, 141 yards. So the ground game was working with a touchdown. But let's talk about the Bills and Josh Allen. I mean, this kid was 16 of 33, 151 yards, no touchdowns, took 7 sacks. He didn't get much in the way of ground support, 16 rushes, 58 yards. They got shut out. You know, what happens if the Bills blew this pick on this kid? Where does this – how far back does this push the Bills? What is the next step for them?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I can put that pin on all 4 or 5 of the teams that did it. I'll say for Buffalo – you know what, Jeff? I don't think it puts them that far back, because to be honest with you, I don't think they're that good anyway. There's enough turmoil up there with LeSean McCoy. They're not a very good team. How they beat the Vikings the week before, I don't know. I think this kid's going to be good, but if it depends how long they hang with him. I think this kid needs 2 or 3 good seasons and some talent. He's got a cannon. He's got some abilities, but he needs time. And again, how much will they let him grow? I don't know.
Well, you know what? It's unfortunate to say that a lot of people look at these younger quarterbacks, and if they have a bad game, right away they're done.
Right.
So
I
hear you, but it's amazing that, you know, nobody is giving any of these kids a chance. Although I feel as though, from what I remember and what I read about Allen, he was the one that had the least of the big four, the least to possibly – you know, take the next step in the NFL.
Correct. He had the most upside, but he was the least ready right now.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that he's having his issues, especially with a Buffalo team. They look like they stripped the roster down a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And,
but, you know, Jeff, not to get sidetracked, but if you look at the stats for all of the big, let's call them the big four, you know, Mayfield 21 of 41, so just about 50%. Rosen, let's see, hold on. Rosen was 15 to 27, just about 50%. You just gave Josh Allen's line, which is not fair. He wasn't even 50%. And I bet you that if I look up Donald, he was barely 50%. These guys are going to struggle this year. That was the knock coming out of college, where none of these guys were an NFL-ready start this year and be great quarterback. They're all representing themselves well, but you're going to have growing pains.
Oh, of course you're going to have growing pains, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they are rookies, and you know, none of them are on a good team. You
right.
know, so
yeah.
each
point.
One of these teams, the Cardinals, Jets, Browns, and Cardinals, Jets, Browns, and Bills all have issues. So, you know, what did you expect? Not you, but, you know, you're not going to have the next Tom Brady hit the field. I mean, Trubisky is having a better second year. Goff is in his third year, is doing better.
Yeah, Wentz.
He did good in his second year.
Mahomes?
You know, Mahomes is, well, Mahomes, let's count this as his first year. He was redshirted last year.
All right. But he was at least on a roster learning the game. But I get your point.
Yeah, but he also took over a playoff team, too.
You're right. Good point.
No, none of these,
he's got great
none of
talent
these other
around
guys,
him.
None
right.
of these other
You're
guys went into a playoff-ready situation.
Correct. That's a great point. There's a team that was in the playoffs last year, has Hunt, Hill, Kelsey. Yeah, great team around. So that's a great point.
Yeah. But let's go over to the Bengals and the Falcons, man. That game, Bengals pulled it out 37-36. Dalton, 29-41, three touchdowns, 337 yards. The rushing game was good, 23 rushes, 99 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. Boyd, 11 catches, 100 yards. A.J. Green, I don't think he's hit 100 yards yet this year. 4 for 78 with a touchdown. And Matt Ryan, 29-39, 419 yards, three touchdowns, three sacks. The ground game was okay, 24 rushes, 92 yards. But you had two receivers, Jones and Sanu, top 100 yards with Julio Jones, 9 catches, 173 yards. Is the Falcons, they seem to have a couple tough losses this year. They just can't seem to – they're putting up points, and Ryan is throwing for a massive amount of yards, but they can't win. What's going on down in Atlanta?
Jeff, same thing. You mentioned with Matt Patricia before, Dan Quinn came over from Seattle as a defensive guy, as a guy who built or helped build the Legion of Boom, and they've done nothing. That is a bad defensive team. I don't think it's a well-coached team. They'll put points on the board. I love what Calvin Ridley's doing up there now to go along with Julio Jones. But this team cannot stop anybody. And I don't care what the record is. The Cincinnati Bengals, and the fact that they're 3-1 in this division, and the Falcons, in that division, and the Steelers are at the bottom of that division or close to the bottom, tells me all I did to the Falcons, though. Jeff, getting back to your point, no defense. And, they're going to struggle.
Dude, wasn't Dan Quinn an offensive coordinator?
No, I believe he was a defensive guy up in Seattle.
I think he was the offensive coordinator. Could you check on that? I'm not by my computer right now. I can't even look. But I'm pretty sure he was the offensive coordinator up there. Because
you know what, Jeff? Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll check it right now. Dan Quinn in Seattle.
It was when the Jets were hoping to get him. It came down to him and Bowles, but Seattle was still in the Super Bowl at the time, or making a Super Bowl run, so they couldn't really talk to him. And I remember hoping to get Quinn because he was an offensive-minded coach.
No, it says in Quinn's first season as defensive coordinator, the Seahawks led the league in fewest points allowed.
Okay. All right.
Seattle, yeah, here is Seattle, 2013-2014 defensive coordinator.
All right, I don't know why I thought he was an offensive coordinator,
yeah,
but whatever.
It's no problem. Like I said, I remember thinking, sometimes I say, Jeff, when you're loaded on offense with guys like Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman, Matt Ryan, you get a good offensive coordinator, but sometimes the coach has to be defensive minded to change the philosophy and make it work. It hasn't worked there so far in Atlanta. It has not worked.
No. No, it hasn't. And this is a team that may struggle for the rest of the year. But,
hey, not to take too long on this team. Real quick, though, but do you think this still is the effect of losing that Super Bowl the way they did to the Patriots? I still believe they haven't recovered from that.
Well, listen, if they're hanging on to that loss now, two seasons later, going on three seasons later, they have some major issues. They need to get over that real quick.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan is not a young kid. I mean, he's not old, but he's 33, 34 years old. So, the window is going to start to tighten a little bit on him. So he needs to, do what he – but he's doing his part with 419 yards, three touchdowns.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad game.
It's a defensive problem, Jeff. They just can't stop anybody. That was a game whoever had the ball last was going to win, and that's exactly what happened. Cincinnati scored with 10 seconds left. So simple math. whoever has the ball on the last play of the game is going to win that game. So,
well, let's move over to an NFC matchup where the Bears totally destroyed the Buccaneers, 48-10. Trubisky, 19-26, 354 yards, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions, a sack. The ground game was 31 rushes, 139 yards. The Trubisky was the leading rusher. 2 receivers topped 100 yards. We're going to do the Khalil Mack stats in a second. Let's go back over to Buccaneers so we could talk about Mack real quick.
Yep.
You said Fitzpatrick had started. He was 9 of 18, 126 yards with an interception. Winston came in 16 for 20, 145 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions. Both of them were sacked twice. They had nothing going on the ground, 18 rushes, 60 yards. Their top receiver was Jackson, 5 catches, 112 yards. But back over to the Bears side with Khalil Mack, 4 total tackles, 3 solos, a sack. I mean, is he single-handedly taking over this defense and making these Bears relevant this year? And how much longer till they're a Super Bowl, possible Super Bowl contender with the way that he's playing?
I always say, Jeff, anytime you get a team that plays defensive like that, they have to get elevated. In this era of football, you know, you took a team that's been scoring 20, high 20s, their quarterback's throwing for 400 yards a game, and you come out there and shut them down, they get elevated to me. I won't put them in the top 3 yet on the NFC, but they're not hanging far behind right now. I got to be honest with you. So Khalil Mack, just by his presence, is making everybody else better. Putting pressure on the quarterback, throw the ball faster. That makes the receivers, makes the corners cover better. This is just a very good defense. And I think, Jeff, the funny part, I think they're going to get better.
Of course they're going to get better. I mean, listen, they had a few defensive pieces with Mack on that team. I mean, I don't know how – we knew that Khalil Mack was a force to be reckoned with. But it seems as though that he was buried out with the Raiders and maybe making fun of Dom and the Raiders so much, we didn't take complete notice to what he was doing. But this guy is a one-man wrecking machine out there.
Yeah. It's a good defense. And if this offense is for real, I'm not sure yet. I mean, Trubisky hasn't thrown more than 2 touchdowns in a game till that one. I think he said he had 6.
Touchdowns.
Again, it's still early, but at the quarter pole, this is a tough team. And I got to tell you right now, if you're an offense in this league, you don't want to play the Green Bay Packers. Chicago Bears. Sorry.
I hear you. I mean, listen, they're showing that they're here to play. This is a team that's maturing. And, you know, I think by next year at this time, I'm not saying they're going to the Super Bowl, but they're going to be mentioned as a heavyweight in the NFC. And speaking of the NFC and heavyweights, where here's a super heavyweight matchup over in the NFC West, the Seahawks and the Cardinals. The Hawks barely squeak it out, 20-17. Russell Wilson, his accuracy was there, 19-26, but 170 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But the ground game was unbelievable. 34 rushes, 171 yards, 2 touchdowns. Davis rushed 21 times, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. Rosen, like you said earlier, 15 of 27, 180, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, and a sack. And the ground game was helping him out a little bit, 28 of 92. You know, we've talked about Wilson in the past, but let me ask you about Rosen. A lot of people said that he was NFL ready. Is it that the Falcons are that bad, or is he having trouble adjusting to the NFL game? Because he did slip down to 10th in the draft. Is there a reason for that? Do you think that he fell that far down with as many quarterback needy teams as there was last year?
There was a lot of questions about his character, Jeff. A lot of people had issues with his character. From what I saw on tape, and again, just a few highlights, and what I've read, most people have said he played better. He looked better than he played. And again, at this point, you have to look at that. But no, I think it's just these guys need time. You know, there was a reason why a lot of people did not go and jump at some of these guys because, again, They're not NFL ready now. Now, again, neither was Carson Wentz's first year. Neither was Jared Goff's first year or so. And, boy, they're probably two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So, again, I think it's too early. I think he just doesn't have a lot of talent around him. And that team may be on their way to an 0-4 season.
Yeah, I have a tendency to agree with you there, but there's just something about how he slipped down that kind of sticks with me.
I agree with you, Jeff. That it's a, you know, most people, you're 100% right. Most people thought he was the most NFL ready, but there was a big question about his character and his ability to play with his teammates, to be a guy who was liked. I think that is a big thing in the locker room nowadays. And I think that's a big reason why he slipped down to number 15 or 16 or wherever he dropped.
Yeah, I hear you, dude. I hear you. Well, yep. Speaking of the Hard Rock and Sports Show, that brings us to our next matchup, the Raiders and Browns. The Raiders won by 45-42 over the Browns. It's not often that you score 42 points in the NFL and lose a game. But Mayfield went 21-41, 295 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions, two sacks. The rushing game, 31 rushes, 208 yards, three touchdowns, but he didn't have a 100-yard receiver. And then on the flip side of that, you got Carr, 35 completions, 58 attempts, 437 yards, four touchdowns, two interceptions, three sacks. Marshawn Lynch got 130 to 139 yards on the ground, and Cook and Cooper each with 100 yards. But I want to – we've talked about the Raiders enough over the years, and we know that this is a broken team no matter what they do. I want to talk about the Browns. Are the Browns being overlooked? Is Mayfield the one to take them around the corner? Because to me, this is a different Browns team than we've seen in the last two or three seasons. I think they're competitive. And I think next year that this is going to be a team to reckon with in the AFC.
Wholeheartedly agree, Jeff. This team could easily be 3-1, possibly 4-0. This team has played well enough, but they doesn't know how to win yet. It's a lot of young guys. I don't like their coach. I still believe that this team might be in the market for a new coach at the end of the year. But this team is right. This team is poised to win and be a force. There's a lot of talent. I like Mayfield. They just, you know, they're the Browns. They're going to find a way to lose games. And until they learn how to win, and I think it's close. It's real close. But you're right. This team is ultra competitive. It just needs to find a way to learn how to win. It might need that veteran guy.
I think that they're better than people give them credit for.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. 1-2-1 is not ridiculous.
They're shown to be very competitive. They have a lot of young pieces, a lot of good pieces. And I think once this team gels it together, I think this may be a scary team for a long time to come. I don't know if they're going to have the success that the Browns teams of the early 80s had, but you know, it's going to give Cleveland some hope, without a doubt, especially since LeBron left. So it's going to give them something else to focus on.
I was thinking about this. Would that be the next, like, if the Browns ever got to a Super Bowl, forget about winning it, how huge would it be in the sports world if the Cleveland Browns ever won a Super Bowl?
Man, wow. I think, you know what, I think that they would definitely cash in on some jersey sales with some of the young players they got, with Mayfield, Chubb, Garrett, a few of the others. So I think that this is a good team a young team that's going to be a good team once they start to gel and get better. But, yeah, you're right. I think they would set the NFL on its ear.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a few teams that haven't won it. The Bengals, right, haven't won one. The Bills, the Browns, the Cardinals, Chargers.
Lions,
Falcons, Jaguars, Lions, Panthers, Texans, Titans, and Vikings have not won the Super Bowl. So still, out of all those teams, real fast, not to get us off target, real fast, of all those teams, I think the biggest celebration, the woeful Browns winning the Super Bowl would really be huge for the NFL and obviously for Cleveland.
Well, yeah, of course. Matter of fact, yeah. I think, let me see. I don't know if she's ready to say something or not. Hold on. I think somebody wants to say something about the dog pound. Go ahead. That's Basil saying that she is a Cleveland Brown fan, and she's a believer in the dog pound.
That's...
you hear this in the background?
That's too... You know, Jeff, there's only one thing to say to that.
Remarkable!
Yeah, well, listen, it would be nice to see a different team and
yeah.
how we've talked before and how some of these teams end up flip-flopping. Maybe next year or the year after will be the year of the Browns, but we can't worry about that now. We got a battle out in California that we need to talk about, man.
Go ahead.
Which was the Chargers and the Niners. The Chargers 29-27 over the Niners. C.J. Beathard, 23 of 37, 298 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Kittle caught six passes, 125 yards and a touchdown. They got an okay ground game, 21 rushes, 76 yards. But Philip Rivers and the Chargers were supposed to, predicted by several, to make it to the Super Bowl, 25 to 39, 250, three touchdowns and a sack. They had Gordon had 100-plus yards for them receiving, and their ground game was 27 rushes, 126 yards. I don't have a lot of faith in the Chargers, especially with the way that the Chiefs have been playing this year. Is this a team that stands a chance to make it as division winner, much less the Super Bowl?
I don't know, Jeff. I still haven't seen anything from the Chiefs that are telling me they're going to come back down to earth. You know, I don't know. I mean, the Chargers have a big issue at kicker right now. The guy missed two extra points and a 54-yard field goal. Not impossible to grab a wild card. I don't see them jumping both Denver and Kansas City to win the division, so we'll see. But, no, I'm not a big believer right now in the Los Angeles Chargers.
I got to be honest. I never was, because for years, for eons, this was a team that either started 0-6, 0-8, or they went on an 8-0 run, and they just always seemed to be hovering around the 500 mark. Only for a few years were they a 12-4, 13-3 team back in the mid to late 90s. But, I don't put much behind them either, to be honest, which I don't see them taking the next step. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either, Jeff. I don't believe in them.
Let's speaking of a matchup and a half, we got the Ravens and the Steelers, Tom. This one's worth watching. Flacco, 28 of 42, 363 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, two sacks. Roethlisberger was 27 of 47, 274 yards, a touchdown, an interception. He got sacked once, but they set or tied a record. This was the lowest amount of yards rushing for a football team since, I think, the merger with the AFC and the NFC, 11 rushes, 19 yards, no touchdowns on the ground. The Ravens, on the other hand, had 11 receivers, Brown, three catches for 116 yards and a touchdown. Do the Steelers miss Le'Veon Bell, or are they just a team that got old since last season?
I think it's a little of both, Jeff. I think this team was falling off last year, and we saw that in the playoff loss. I don't think they can stop anybody. And I believe they haven't scored a touchdown in the second half of any game this year. They were limited to 47 total yards in the second half this week against a Ravens team that's good, not great. They missed Le'Veon Bell, and I understand that he's going to return week 8. He's going to sign week 7, and he'll be back right after the bye, I believe, which is week 7 for the Steelers, and play week 8. I think it's against the Browns. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's a little too late. I would be shocked. I'd have to see something dramatic from this defense to give the Steelers a chance at this point. But, Jeff, is it the same as some of the other divisions where do we believe in Cincinnati? Do we believe in Baltimore? Can the Steelers get to the top because the rest of the division is not very good?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Cincinnati does not scare me, but neither does Baltimore. But if I had to pick one of the three, as of right now, I'm going to say that Baltimore would be my favorite to win that division.
I would agree with that.
I think I think that Flacco is the more polished quarterback between him and the guy in Cincinnati. So
yeah.
I'm going to say that Baltimore would end up, you know, with the upper hand. Pittsburgh, if Bell comes back, it's one, how much dissension is going to be in that locker room.
Yeah.
And
he's going to
be
yeah.
welcome back. And is he going to play full out knowing that he doesn't have a long-term deal?
Yeah.
Or is he going to come in and pull some stunts like that you never would think that somebody would do before? Like, you know, I have a headache or I have an upset stomach.
Yeah.
You know, you never know.
Yeah, the question I would have is, you know, if they're winning and he comes back and helps, I think things get forgotten. But if he comes back and they're a losing record, I think there's a lot of animosity, Jeff. And I think you're right. I think that just that whole situation just blows up worse. So I'm going to be interesting to see where they're at come the bye, and when he joins that team, we'll see it pretty quick. But yeah, I think that's a team in turmoil right now, and you know, the guy in the hot seat's the coach. I don't think he's done a good job.
Well, here's another. Let's further this a little bit, Tom. Roethlisberger, who just two seasons ago was teetering on the edge of I may retire. If they have a bad year and finish under 500, does Roethlisberger run out the door, seeing the writing on the wall that maybe without Bell, that this is a team that's not going to get as far as they thought? Is Tomlin's job in jeopardy? You know, there's a lot more to this than just that. And even Bell, you're talking, we just finished up week four. He announces to the world that he's going to show up between week 7 and 8 on their bye week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they were talking about this morning on ESPN. That would be like the latest that he could show up and play and sign and
yes.
get credit for the year.
Yes.
So which makes you think, is this just something to cover him so that he gets his year and he becomes a free agent? You know, there's a lot involved with this because the offers aren't coming in for him. And Pittsburgh may be stuck with just dealing with this until they could finally wash their hair of this guy, which if I was them, I would already tell him, say, listen, don't even bother to come back. We're going to put you on the, you know, whatever list they could put him on. We don't want you back. You know, just stay where you are. I don't care about your year of free agency. Next year, you're gone anyway. Or if they really screw him, franchise him again. You know what I mean? That's what I would do if I was the Steelers and stick it up his ass like he did to them.
Well, I think the question would be, you know, if they could see down the line, Jeff, and know that at that point they're under 500, why bother signing him? And then, because they would still hold his rights for next year, so he'd have to come back next year to them anyway, which I don't think at that point they'd want him back, and they probably would trade his rights. But, yeah, it's a tough spot. But going back to your Roethlisberger thing, don't forget, before the season started, he turned around and said, I could actually see myself playing another 4 years. So, you know, does the stank of what's going on in that locker room and a bad season change his mind? I don't see Big Ben going to play for another team. So if he's not willing to stick it out with this one, because right now it could be in a rebuild. I don't think he sticks it out. I think he could walk away, Jeff, if this is a really bad year and they start to talk about changing coaches.
Well, you know what, Tom, at his age, and what is he, 37 or so?
Probably, yeah. Same as Eli, sure.
You know, like, do you really want to be part of a rebuild? That's why I'm surprised that Manning didn't look to get released. That at that age, when you still have some ability and the possibility that you could contribute to a team, why is Roethlisberger going to want to stay if he sees the writing on the wall and he's like, this is a rebuild. I can't stay here for this.
Oh, that's the question of the day. That's Jeff, it's exactly my thing. I agree. That's the point. If this team gets blown up at the end of the year, if they finish third in their division, out of the playoffs, 500 or worse, and they're going to fire the coach and start a rebuild, you know, that's probably 2 or 3 years out. Yeah, does Big Ben stick around and take a beating for 3 years? Does he ask to be released and traded? You know, or does he just simply retire and walk away after this? I don't see him as a guy. I didn't think he would be a guy who wanted to hang around for another 3 or 4 years anyway. He just never seems interested. But we'll see. I think that's a very interesting story developing in Pittsburgh. If that season doesn't turn around quick, that could be a very ugly time in Pittsburgh for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah. But let's move over from that game because we only have three left, and I'm saving the Jets and Giants for last so that we could dissect this a little bit. And the Chiefs and Denver, Chiefs 23 over Denver. Mahomes kind of came back to earth a little bit, 28 of 45, 304 yards, just one touchdown. He took a sack. The ground game was unbelievable, 26 rushes, 142 yards, two touchdowns with Hunt getting 19 carries for 121 yards and a touchdown. Kelce, 7 catches, 78 yards and a touchdown. KC and the Rams, one of the only two teams in the league that are 4-0. Denver having some issues, definitely, although their defense is okay. Keenum, 21 of 33, 245 yards. He took four sacks. They gained 159 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. I'm not a big believer in the Broncos and Denver. I think the Chiefs are for real. I think that they needed that quarterback change. I'm not going to say that they're a favorite, but if I was to pick a team for the AFC to go to the Super Bowl right now, it would definitely be the Chiefs. But Denver, are they ever going to get it together with a quarterback, especially we've talked about this before, with Elway, the quarterback that he was, he just can't seem to find somebody to quarterback this team. Well, what is going on in Denver? And is there any chance that you think that they would end up trading Von Miller somewhere along the line to get some draft picks or some pieces before it's too late?
You know, Jeff, it's a great, great take on that. I think that at some point Elway's going to have to blow this up. You know, after a while, you have this puzzle that's really, you know, really good puzzle, and then you lose a piece or you substitute, you put something in just to fill the spot, and then another one. I think that's what's happening in Denver. And eventually, Elway's going to realize that he needs to blow it up and start all over again with some new pieces. And I think the one thing he's got that he could probably grab some picks and help speed up the process is Von Miller. It's hard having a guy like Von Miller who's getting a little old now and just surrounding him with a bad team. And it just, you're right, offensive from the quarterback position, they've tried, you know, Paxton Lynch, Trevor Siemian, Osweiler with a horrendous, ridiculous contract. That will probably be the biggest mistake of his career, Elway. And now with Case Keenum, who is what he is, Jeff, a middle down the road guy who's got a little bit of upside with a lot of downside. And, I could see Elway trading Von Miller to a contender for some picks. That's a very interesting take on the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I just can't see. I just find it hard to believe that Elway, with the success that he had as a quarterback, simply can't just find the guy that they need. And is it going to tarnish his time? I mean, don't forget, as good of a player as he was, he's only won the Super Bowl twice. I mean, only twice. But somebody that was there like three times previous couldn't come away with a Super Bowl win. It's, you know, is this going to tarnish? He went from being a sub-500 quarterback in the Super Bowl and now as an executive. Does this completely tarnish his image in Denver, or is he too loved for that to ever happen?
Well, no, and in Denver, Jeff, he'll never, you know, he played in five Super Bowls. He won the two, albeit he won it because they had a good defense and a great running game. Although that guy should never be in the Hall of Fame. Elway, I think he's got the same problem that a lot of teams have. It's very hard to find that quarterback. You know, he's trying right now to find the next big, you know, the next guy. To me, he needs a Nick Foles type. Now, even I don't think Nick Foles is anything more than, you know, had that one good streak in for 2 months last year. But he needs a guy or to draft the right quarterback, and he hasn't done it yet. You know, Siemian didn't work out. Paxton Lynch didn't work out. I think Elway won a Super Bowl as a GM. I think it would take a few more years, but he could head to what you said, Jeff. Yes, he could be tarnished if he doesn't turn this around.
Well, now the moment that I've been waiting for since Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's to get involved with the Giants and the Jets. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go over the Saints and the Jaguars stats real quick. I just pulled out a few things that I wanted to talk just to give some numbers. And then we're going to talk about the Giants and the Jets real quick. The Saints, 11 receivers. They were 32 rushes, 170 yards on the ground, three touchdowns. So they scored. They put up 33 against the Giants, although Breeze didn't have a typical Drew Breeze game. The Jaguars, Blake Bortles looked like Joe Montana, 29 of 38, 388 yards, two touchdowns and an interception, two sacks, 126 yards on the ground, two 100-yard plus receivers. Both of these teams are favorites to possibly go to the Super Bowl and be playoff contenders. And then we have the two New York teams, two teams that the Jets, I said earlier, weren't going anyplace. You know how I feel about the Giants. I think that they didn't do enough. But let's real quick, the Giants first. Eli, this guy is holding on to something. I don't know what. He had a decent game, but he only had a 6.2 average on his passes. Barkley, 10 rushes, 44 yards, with one run, 28 yards. So he got almost more than half his yards on one run. And then the Jets, Donald, 17 of 34, 167 yards, a 4.9 average, 14 rushes, 34 yards. Donald had a touchdown. Donald, to me, has more of an upside than the Giants because he's a rookie. So, you know, he's going through some growing pains. But Eli, without a line, he has a receiver, he has a running back. What is it that these teams are doing wrong? Let's start with the Jets first. What is it? I mean, is it Bowles? Is it the scheme? What is it? This guy is reminding me, and his stats, way too much of Mark Sanchez with the 170-plus yards each week. It's too Mark Sanchez-like for me. Are they ruining Donald already after four games?
No, no, but they're not helping him either. They can't run the ball. They can't block. Their schemes are terrible. I mean, I don't understand any. There's no rhyme or reason to their offense. They gave up 500 yards of offense. You're a defensive coach. Your team is supposed to be built around the defense. And let's be honest, Blake Bortles and the Jaguars are not a juggernaut. They lost Fournette at halftime. You know, this team has they were out coached, out schemed, and I'll tell you that your boy Donald is not surrounded by a lot of talent. They make a ton of mistakes, Every time they make a big play, somebody's holding, somebody's tripping, you know, somebody's blocking illegally. I watched the game. They were outplayed, and they looked like they didn't belong in the same stadium as the Jaguars.
Well, I unfortunately was at work, so I could not watch the game, but I was listening to the game on the radio. And if it looked as bad as it sounded, I'm glad that I was at work and didn't waste my time actually watching it.
Yeah.
I was busy sitting in a car, so I actually had nothing else to do other than to listen to the Jet game, and I was practically burying my head in the dashboard with everything I heard.
Boring.
The team just couldn't get going.
Boring. Oh, my God.
Doug Marrone to punch through a touchdown and then go for 2 points.
Oh, yeah.
Near the end of the game. And, you know, I was listening to ESPN. You know what his reasoning was for this?
I didn't hear that. Go for it.
Oh, you're going to love this. That's because that's what the chart says to do.
Holy
cow. The chart says to go for 2 points. You already were winning. I could see not kneeling on the ball, but I could see taking your time, going up to the line, you know, letting it draw out, you know, do what you got to do to waste time. But to actually punch through a two-point conversion at that point in the game, I mean, come on.
No,
come
here's
on.
My bigger problem. Yeah, Doug Marrone's a moron, and the bigger problem I have is the Jets didn't get excited. The Jets did not get upset with it. Even after the game, they're like, no, we understand. You don't understand. You, at the very least, kick the field goal. You kick – if you want – the right – you know, you don't want – you know, to me, it's almost as bad if you went out there and kneeled down and didn't do anything. That would have been insulting if you're a Jet. okay? But going for two and actually trying to get it is embarrassing your team. Kick the extra point. That's the game. Doesn't matter. You know, for Marone to say follow the chart, he should be embarrassed, but the Jets should be embarrassed. They weren't even mad about it. They weren't. I was mad. I'm not a Jet fan. You should be pissed off that that guy lined up and went for two in that spot. That's embarrassing.
Oh, Tom, I listen, I agree 1,000%. I really do. I think that was unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the Jet team, that the coach wasn't fired up, pissed off. He's got – I like Todd Bowles as a guy. He's a Yankee fan. He loves Don Mattingly. I like Todd Bowles. I've heard him talk. He's a great guy. He has no emotion. He should have been on that sideline screaming and yelling, throwing his clipboard on the floor, whatever, to let them know that he was pissed off that they did that and we allowed them to do it. That's it. He should be fired this year.
Well, listen, that very well may happen. That very well may happen. And you're right, because as a Jet fan, when your team is being buried and you're watching and you're listening, well, I wasn't watching, I was listening, and you hear that this team with seconds left on the clock is lining up to go for a two-point conversion, and then you hear, this is what the chart says? Are you serious?
Yeah, that's
like,
embarrassing.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
that's
embarrassing. Yeah, I don't care. It's final seconds of a game. You have to do something there. Again, if I were the Jets and they took a knee, I would be embarrassed that you took a knee. So I don't want to be embarrassed. Line up, kick the extra point. That's football. You don't go for two.
Well, you know what, Tom? When you know that you have the game in hand,
right?
Okay, we've seen teams take the knee when the other team has no timeouts, with 1:30 left on the clock, and they'll milk it one way or another just to kill the time off the clock. They already were winning by a large margin. It wasn't like they let it come back with 25 seconds left.
Yeah.
You know, it was over.
Absolutely.
Why do that? Okay?
No, there was
you know what?
Reason.
The rest of the league also is going to take notice to that. So whatever Marone was trying to prove and everything else, it wasn't just the Jets that seen it. So people are going to see that. If that's the way he's going to play his game and coach his team, they're not going to make any friends anytime soon, and you know that.
And listen, that's – you know what, Jeff? I get it, and what happens is somewhere down the line, somebody's going to kick dirt in your face. You're not that good a team. Somebody in the league is going to see you do stuff like that, and they're going to do it back to you. I get that part, okay? If you want to be Doug Marone and all of a sudden you think you're the big bad, you know, bully on the block, you're not. Your defense is okay, better than okay, and your offense is schizophrenic. One week you're going to be great, one week you're going to be terrible. But, you know, somewhere down the line, somebody's going to, but if you're the Jets, you can't be happy with that. You can't point the finger at somebody. You know, in the media, they were like, oh, no, we understand, it's okay. No, you're going to be in the locker room going, we're an embarrassment, but you don't do that. You don't embarrass us. You don't come, you know, that is just, I'm sorry. That team is a reflection of their coach, and he's just too mild-mannered. I don't need him screaming up and down the sideline, but in that spot, you got to get hot that your team was just embarrassed.
Well, you know, Tom, you are right, because I did happen to hear his press conference after the game. Okay,
uh-huh.
And he was very melancholy, so to speak, but all he kept saying was basically the same thing over and over again, which was, well, we have to go back and look at the tape. Well, on Monday morning, we'll look at the tape. We'll see what happened. We'll see what went wrong. You know, Marone also complimented the Jets' two middle linebackers and then proceeded to have Bortles shred them apart. So,
yeah, they couldn't cover
anybody,
Jeff. Yeah, I would compliment them too. Thanks for showing up. You played terrible.
I totally understand. But my point being is, it's almost like Marone knew something, exploited it, but also made fun of it in the time being by saying, you know, this is what we're going to do. You know, your linebackers, your middle linebackers are awesome, but I'm going to show you what they're not doing. And you had Blake Bortles doing it. If it was Tom Brady or Wentz or Matt Ryan or even Matthew Stafford, Ben Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, That's Drew Brees. That shredded your defense apart. This is a guy, Blake Bortles, last year at this time, people were saying that he was going to be lucky if he finished the year with Jacksonville, much less sign an extension. Now, all of a sudden, the guy is the second coming of Joe Montana. And, yes, I know it was the Jets, but he kept throwing the ball right there, right in front of them. And they didn't adjust their game. And this is after your coach turns around and says, yeah, you know, they got some good linebackers over there, but let me show you how stupid they could look. So it's like Marone knew something, and he exposed such a weakness of these Jets with the linebackers and their pass coverage. So now the next team that plays them should be sending this guy some candy or something, because they, if they follow the same game plan, they can have the same success against the Jets.
Yeah. Listen, you spelled out the roadmap to beat the Jets, and I get that. But again, you know what? You could be lacking in talent. You could be outmatching the coaching department. Nobody should ever be allowed to embarrass you, you know, and you be okay with it. Come out and say, I don't appreciate it. I think that was wrong. You know, again, you got to go out there and play football and stop them, but there's no reason to go for two. At the end of a football game, you're up by 18 points already. You know, with 25 seconds left, it's an embarrassment. And if you don't get embarrassed by it, take off the uniform and go home. That's my opinion.
No. Well, you know what? We shredded the Jets up a little bit. It's time to warm up the shredder and get the Giants in there.
Oh, okay.
I think it's embarrassing that Eli is averaging 6.2 yards a pass in that game. And the pick, the second pick in the first round, Saquon Barkley. Now, I understand that this kid, it's only his fourth game and everything. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's a bust. Please don't think that. But what I am saying, though, is I think that the Giants wasted a pick on a running back. He may have moves, but if he isn't putting yards behind him, those moves mean nothing. And 44 yards and 28 of those 44 yards on one play, you know, that's bad. This is bad news. The Giants, that offensive line is terrible. They just can't seem to get it going. Then you got Barkley. If the offensive line is bad, he ain't going to be able to make it through. He ain't going to be able to penetrate and get into the secondary or anywhere close to the secondary. He's not going to be able to do anything. They're using him as a receiver out of the backfield a lot, I see. And he's not really getting that many yards. But, you know, this guy is known as more of a running back with good hands, yes, but he's not putting any real estate behind him. And I mean, is this going to affect his mental well-being for year two and beyond? Are people going to right away start saying that this was a wasted pick, like me? Because I firmly believe that they should have went someplace else. I mean, I understand best player available mode and all this other stuff, but not when you needed some of the pieces that you needed. Like, they would have been better off with somebody else, than because this hinders their development, I think. They're not a win-now team. And I think they're on their way to another 3-13 season. I mean, talk me out of off the ledge here. Well, what do you got for me?
Well, you know what, Jeff? It's hard for me to talk you off the ledge. I think they're better than three wins. I do. I still believe that. I think their defense played really well. What I said before the game to you on Thursday night was Breeze outdoors is a different quarterback, and this defense can get to him. They did for the first half. He didn't throw a touchdown pass. Here's where I'll differ with you on the Barkley thing. Saquon Barkley is the real deal. He's a great running back. Yes, he needs an offensive line, and I have to hope that at some point they'll put together an offensive line by next year or so to take full advantage of it. The only thing I'll disagree with, they are a win-now team because they kept the Manning, and they said, well, here's what we're going to do. We think there's enough with Eli. And we can put a great player around him in Saquon. We got Beckham, we got Shepard, and we got Ingram. And a good enough defense to where we could be more than competitive right now. And I believe that they were right with that. I'll say I stood behind them, and I'm not going to change my mind now. The problem is, A, their offensive line has not stepped up. They played better, but they're nowhere. Barkley never gets a clean shot at the second level. He has to make two people miss at the line of scrimmage on nearly every play, and anything that he gets is strictly based on his ability. So, Jeff, whatever he's gained to date is strictly on his back. My major problem with this team, and you brought it up, Eli's small average per completion. Jeff, he completed 10 passes in a row. 10 passes in a row over a couple series. He had less than 70 yards. He was completing every dink and dunk in the book. They never took a shot down the field. Now, I'll just finish by saying this. You take the shot down the field for two reasons. One, okay, you're hoping that maybe throw one up deep and as a pass interference, you get a big play on your receiver. Something happens. But the other part that it helps you with is taking the shot down the field, the corners, the safeties, the linebackers have to back up a couple of steps. And that allows your receivers to run a little bit and have a little bit of room. Right now, everybody's coming forward because the Giants are throwing 2, 3, 4. Yeah, they need 10 yards, they throw for an 8. They need 6, they throw 5. You know, they never open it up and force the defense to play on their heels. Everybody's coming forward. Nobody's ever going backwards. And I'm blaming the coach 450%. They were out game planned. They didn't adjust. And all he had to do was open it up a little bit and just make Beckham run and tell Eli throw it. Take two steps and throw it as far as you can. Even if it fails, you're getting them to think. And I was more frustrated at this game than any game I've watched in the last 2 years plus. Sorry for the rant.
No, listen, that's what this is all about. Because now here's the thing, okay? You're saying defense. They gave up 33 points. Okay, now they did hold Drew Brees to 33 points, and he didn't have a stellar day that he normally does.
No.
But still, nonetheless, they 33 yards, 170 yards on the ground. They spread the ball around to 11 receivers, okay?
Yep.
So the defense, to me, it didn't bend, it broke. That's one thing.
In the second half, Jeff. I'll argue with that point, only say they kept them to 12. They were in the red zone four times in the first half, the Saints, and came away with 12 points, four field goals.
Oh,
if the Giants could have put 12, another touchdown on the board, they would have won that game.
Points. And
I got you.
You know, red zone scoring is important. But let's go back over to the Giants side. You said that Eli at a 6.2 average. He completed 10 passes in a row. You're talking 62 yards.
And
he has to be better than that.
Absolutely.
Has to be better than that.
But the problem
is Barkley,
you
could say whatever you want about Barkley. And once again, I'm not saying that he's a bust. It's hard to say that anybody's a bust, regardless of their position, after four games. You would be mentally ill to say somebody was a bust after only four games. But what I'm saying is there's a wasted pick. Is different than a bust. To me, yes, you went out, you got a great running back, but if you knew that offensive line, it's showing that the offensive line, you're only allowing Eli to throw 6.2 yards. That means the receivers are barely getting off the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
That's one thing. Barkley, 10 rushes, okay, 44 yards. That's not bad, because if you figure if he had 10 more rushes, maybe he would have gotten closer to 100 yards.
Yep.
But when half of those yards, 28 yards, almost 30 yards of your 44 yards, two-thirds of your yards were on one play. You know, that's bad. And he could deke and duck and everything else that he wants to do. But if he can't break free and get to the next level, it means nothing. You can have Barry Sanders, Gale Sayers, and O.J. Simpson back there. If they can't get free, you're tying them up. It doesn't matter. And as far as a win now team, you know, what is the definition of win now? To me, is that they're going to contend for a Super Bowl. Right now, the way they're playing, I'm thinking they're going to contend for the first pick in the first round next year. The way that they're going, they just both New York teams. I'm not just being critical of the Giants, but we're talking about the Giants now. Neither one of them seems to be able to take the next step. The Jets had the good showing in the first game, but it's been downhill from there. And the Giants, they're steady, but without that offensive line, and I said it a million times, Solder was let go by the Patriots for a reason. Belichick didn't just let him go because he was like, oh, we got this young kid. He let him go for a reason. And I really think that's starting to show. And Gettleman, who was known for taking the biggest, meanest, ugliest offensive lineman when he was in Carolina, just, I mean, I know you can only work with what's available, but he's got to do something. He's got to try harder. Something has to give, or else it's going to be a very long couple seasons for the Giants. And you see, all you got to do is look across the way at the Jets. And I'm telling you, as a Jet fan, you don't want to be in that situation. You don't know what that situation's like because the Giants have had some success over the years. But to know that it could happen, it's got to be a scary thought for you and other Giant fans.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, there's enough young talent here that this team should get to be good. The question is going to be a year or two, maybe even next year, what do the Giants do with quarterback? Now, yes, you have to fix the offensive line. You would think if I was going to the offseason and I'm the New York Giants, my biggest concern is going to be offside. But if you look at it, Solder signed forever. Hernandez is a rookie. Arpaio's back is going to be back at center next year. He's 3 or 4 years in the league. Omama is only 4 or 5 years in the league. And then Chad Wheeler. So realistically, I don't know what you do. But yes, it is a little scary. But you have such a core group of guys, Jeff. If they could ever get this offensive line playing at the same level, at least playing it. And again, they've been better. It's just quite not there yet. If it ever does, I guarantee you this Giant team will roll off a bunch of wins. They're good enough defensively. Not great, but good enough. Offensively, it's there. I've seen enough of that to say it's there. But this week was pathetic. This week was pathetic. And the fact that he didn't take a shot deep really just pissed me off.
Well, you know, Tom, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know, simply because, to me, I think they're showing that how much that offensive line or lack of
is 100%.
Killing them.
Absolutely.
You know,
100%, Jeff.
But,
go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going, because I'm trying to look something up as you're talking.
I'm thinking that here's the thing, and I said this to him, we've had this conversation already. I think Gettleman did the best he possibly could. He signed the second best offensive lineman in the draft and the best left tackle in the draft. They couldn't get Norwell, but they got Solder. You're right, Jeff. There's a reason why Belichick let him be, but there's a lot of teams that wanted Solder. He was the best left tackle available to them. They drafted the second best offensive lineman in the draft, in my opinion, behind the kid from Notre Dame, getting Hernandez. You know, Omama was a top five guard last year. They got him in. You know, they did everything they could based on who was available and what they had. The only thing they could have did, and you're right, was draft a number two or trade down and take the lineman from Notre Dame. And maybe that would have made them even better, but you wouldn't have had Barkley. So I don't know where I would have went with that. I still like Barkley. I don't think they would have made them better.
Real quick, week one against Jacksonville, Manning, his average was 6.1, okay? Week two against Dallas, okay? I'm just looking this up real quick. He averaged 6.3 yards a throw. Week three against the Texans, he averaged 10.2 yards a throw, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the Saints, against the Saints, he was 6.2 yards, okay? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. And against the Saints, Barkley, 44 yards, okay? Against the Texans, Barkley, 17 rushes, 82 yards, along at 24. So one quarter of his yards was on one play. Against the Cowboys, Barkley, 11 carries, 28 yards. His long was 10 yards. So he seems to have, and against the Jaguars, it was equally as bad because he had the one carry for, what was it, 40 or 68 yards. He was 18 of 106, take away the 68 yards. And he's not, that line needs to be repaired. And I know that there's only so much that they can do at this point in time of the year,
yep.
You know, but Gettleman needs to get on the ball and do something, because if not, Barkley, Eli right now at three games, he didn't even crack 7 yards an attempt. And he had one game where he was over 10 yards. So, I mean, he just shows that he doesn't have time. Two games, Barkley didn't even have stand a chance. You know,
Jeff,
I don't understand it.
Wholeheartedly agree. You got to just hope that the offensive line at some point gets enough work that it turns around. I don't know if it will, but I think the pieces are there. If that offensive line could ever gel and start to play at a higher level. Now, maybe they can't. I don't know. We'll find out quickly. But if they ever do, this team could be dangerous. Will they win a Super Bowl? No. Not right now. Not as built. They still have – they need help at corners. They need help at one of the safety spots. I'm not crazy about all about the linebackers, and they could get a better pass rush. This week you get back – you know, you get Carolina, but you get back – Vernon starts, Apple's back. You know, there's possibilities here. We'll play better. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I was not happy. I'm putting this loss completely – 100% on the coach. He did not push the ball down the field and get that team, who had the worst secondary in football, Jeff, one of the worst secondaries in football, did not get them to turn on their heel ever. Everything was in front of them every single time.
Schumer.
Yeah, I played this all with Schumer. No, I won't say that yet, Jeff. It's too soon. You know, I know a lot of people are running for the hills. Oh, he was bad in Cleveland, but so was Belichick. I'm not buying into that. But if you're an offensive coach, I expect better. I expect the game plans to be better. It might not work. You might not. You might. You know, Jeff, I can call you up and say, Jeff, this is what I want you to do. And you may do it and not be successful. But okay, you tried. He did not put his team in position to win that football game, and I want him to be aggressive. You have great receivers. You have a still good quarterback. Let them be – just throw the ball down the field. Not every play, but just let the other team know you got to think behind you a little bit. And nobody was thinking behind, and he was getting – listen, I'll give you 3-4 yard, 6 yard passes all day long. You have to complete them all the way down the field. Think about it. You'd have to complete 10 or 20 passes. You know, you have to complete 12 or 15 passes to score a touchdown successfully on a drive if you're going to dink and dunk for 5 or 6 yards a clip. It doesn't work, Jeff. I'm not happy about it. Hopefully they'll fix it this week, but we'll get more into that when we do the Thursday show.
Now, Tom, I mean, I know we're running late and everything. I don't want to take too much more time, but I got to say, you're 100% right. If they just throw the ball down the field once in a blue moon, but then again, maybe holding the ball that long is something that they can't do. If the pocket collapses around Eli, you can't have this guy. One, he's 37. Two, he was never known as a runner. Three, the guy has gone throughout his career never having a major injury that cost him any time. So why put him in harm's way now? Because to me, a 37-year-old quarterback that can't run, starting to run, is bad news. So even though I agree with you that he does need to add a ball out, but he also needs the time too. And with their quarterback options behind Eli, I wouldn't want to take a chance with him getting hurt. Because if he gets flushed out of the pocket, you know, and he gets mauled, that could spell the end of that season. And whatever glimmer they have is just going to get blown out, because Barkley ain't going to be able to handle that team on his own right now with that offensive line.
Here's what I'll differ with you, Jeff, on that. If you're going to play, if you're going to throw the ball deep, you don't put three receivers in the pattern. You keep a tight end back. You may want to keep two tight ends in. But here's the difference. And as a guy who was never a natural quarterback, I played quarterback in leagues, it's a simple process. You take two steps, you turn, and you throw the ball. You don't have to throw it on the line. You put a little air on it, and you let your receiver run for it. You don't have to have a lot of time, especially the way these guys run. You don't have to have a lot of time to throw the ball deep. Now, you do if you're going to look off one way, you're going to look the other way, you're going to come back, you're going to make a reprogression, you're going to make the guy run across the field. If you're running a simple up and go, you're running a simple seam it up, it's a two-step, plant your foot, and just put some air on it and throw it. There's no reason.
Right, that is possible, but you know what? Even at his age, he's still able to throw the ball farther and faster than those guys could run for it, which now you're exposing the ball beyond the receiver, so he's not even going to be anywhere near it to make a play if he's just taking a two-step drop. Second, how far, if they're only getting 6.2 yards an attempt as it is, okay, what is the definition of a deep ball? 20, 25 yards plus?
No, you gotta throw it as far as you can, let the guy run. Jeff, here's the thing. I don't care if it's successful. You just have to make the defense think, what if? Right now, here's the thing. When you're playing defense in the NFL or anywhere else, you have to divide the field up into sections and say, I'm gonna take away, you're gonna give the offense something. You're either gonna say, I'm gonna give them underneath, I'm gonna give them the middle, or I'm gonna give them deep. You're going to give up something because you can't defend the entire field. So as a coach, you're taught, always keep everything in front of you because it's easier to come up on the football than it is to go back on the football. So as an offensive guy, I got to find what they're giving me. If they're giving me the deep ball, I'm going to take it and then force them. Now, that if you get the corners to start dropping, the safeties to start dropping, or the linebackers to drop, what happens is that 5 or 6 yard pass, when you complete it, there's nobody there, and now you're running for an additional 5, 10, or 15 yards. But when everybody's up, not worried about what's behind them, and you throw it front, now there's nowhere to go. Now you're catching the ball, and you're getting hit right away. So the idea of the long pass, even when not successful, it forces the defense to cover the deep part of the field and take that away and keep everything in front of you. So the theory is let them backpedal. Then you'll come up in front and you'll complete the bigger pass in front of them. But when you're completing the pass in front of them and they're standing there, you're not going anywhere. That's the theory behind throwing the ball deep for me.
Okay, but now, and that's understandable, and that's all good, well and good. But now here's where the hole in your theory becomes relevant, okay?
Go ahead.
You're talking about Eli airing it out, okay?
Go ahead.
The defense already knows that that offensive line isn't going to protect him for more than a second or two. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. Two, the receivers, if you throw a 30-40-yard bomb and the receivers are only able to get to 25-30 yards by the time that ball is anywhere close to coming down, you're exposing the ball to the secondary, like I said earlier. Three, the biggest counterpoint to what you just said is 6 point something, 6 point something, and 6 point something in three of his last four games. So which already knows there's a game plan or it's blueprint for these defenses to follow, which is to put the pressure on him. That offensive line is going to cave. He's not going to have time. If the first game was a 9.3, second game was 10.2, third game was 6.3, fourth game was 9.8, then I could say, okay, he has a little bit more time. But he's consistently, three of the last four games, barely cracking 6 yards, which means that by the time the cornerback stuffs the receiver at the line, this guy is barely getting any plays. So to really throw it out, the safety's got to be sitting there salivating. And I think that it's, although I do understand your point, and I know you're right. What you're saying is just 100% correct. It's not going to work for them because everybody's going to know he doesn't have the time. The stats are showing that. So that, to me, is the only thing that would concern me with that, with knowing that the other teams are going to be like, well, even if he throws it, we all know he can't do this all game, so he did it once. Maybe he'll do it again. But we're not worried because they can't score. They can't move the ball.
I agree that they're not worried about it. You got to make it work. You throw it up a few times. You get an interference penalty. Maybe you make a catch. Something makes them start to go, we have to start defending the deep third of the field. And right now, teams are not covering – you read off the stats. I would leave the deep end of the field wide open because the Giants don't throw it there. So now you just cut off big piece of the field, and now the teams only have to play the middle and short. And once you do that, Jeff, you make things impossible. You have to make the team – you have to make your opponent cover the entire field because it's impossible to do. You have to force them to put somebody in a thought process of watching the deep third, middle third, and short. If you do not and you just become a middle third and short team, you have just covered yourself. That's the problem.
Well,
I get your point.
And that's exactly what has happened, though, Tom.
Absolutely.
They've already proved that they can't do beyond. You know, and don't get me wrong, to show you how much that I understand your point about them airing it out, when the Jets signed Brett Favre, okay, mm-hmm. I always said, and I think I even said it on the show on more than one occasion, Eric Mangini was the coach. The Jets, of course, as always, had quarterback problems. They were lucky enough to get Brett Favre, even though it was the end of his career. He had a good run, but then he got injured. If I was Mangini, I would have told those guys, listen, it does not matter what happens right now. I want you to take that ball and throw it as far as you can three times in a row. If we catch it and score, we catch it and move the ball, excellent. But I'm showing them right now that I want to stretch the field from day one, play one of the season. And they didn't do that. I can't remember the sequence of plays they ran, but they didn't throw the ball deep. So I do understand what you're saying. But the difference was the Jets were a little bit more prepared for Favre than they are right now in their position, because could you imagine Eli holding on to that ball for 3 seconds before he unleashes the ball? His head will be getting knocked off. He just simply doesn't have the time.
You don't have to hold the ball a long time, Jeff, to throw the ball. Again, you do. Here's the problem with the Giants and Eli. The Giants and Eli is a great quarterback in a sense. He's extremely prepared. And Eli is one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen with the progression. So he'll look at the receivers. He'll come off his number one target, two target, maybe back to one. But he'll try to do that, and that's when he gets in trouble. But the problem is Eli will throw the ball late, deep. And you can't do that because now you've allowed the corners and the safeties to get on your receiver. What he needs to do is take the snap, one step, two steps, and just put the ball in his back heel and throw. At that point, it's near impossible to get sacked often if you do that. When Eli gets in trouble is when he tries to go through his progression, and then he doesn't. That's it. But there's no reason you can't one, two, and throw the ball. Put a little arc on it, give it a little air, and let your receiver run under the ball. And again, even if it's just misses, it's just not successful, I'm telling you, you'll force the defense to backpedal, and now you can throw the ball in front of them and have a little bit of room to run. That's all you need. Just a little extra. Just to catch the ball and be able to turn and run and not have a guy immediately on top of you, that's the key. Again, it doesn't have to work. They just have to think that it might work. That's all. And then, Jeff, the problem is they're not even trying. If they had done three or four times and it didn't work and didn't help, I would agree with you. They didn't even give it a shot. That's my problem.
I'll tell you the truth. If I was in their position, I wouldn't even give it a shot either. You know, listen, some of these receivers and skilled position players run the 40 in 4.2, okay? Tom Brady, if I remember correctly, was getting rid of the ball in 1.8 seconds or 2.3 seconds from when he gets the ball in his hands, drops back, and he throws it. So now I think that with the receiver getting bumped at the line, okay, it's going to take him at least 5 to 6 seconds to cover something like 40 yards to even be in the area of where you want to throw the ball. And I don't think that Eli has that time. I just don't see it.
I understand your point.
Everything that you're saying is 100% true. I mean, this is just normal way of thinking. But, I mean, evidently there's a reason why they're not trying it. There has to be a reason why they're not doing this. They're 4 games in, and the guy only cracked the 10-yard average once and is hovering around the 6 to 6.5 mark, 6 point from 6.2, I think, to 6.8 for the three other games of the season. There has to be a reason for it that they're not trying to do that.
I
know you don't want to do –
I agree. I'm agreeing with you.
You don't want to do too many, take the chance of too many turnovers simply because this team can't move the ball for yardage. How are they going to move the ball to score? So that would scare me too.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I just, like I said, as a fan, as a guy who's coaching a football in his day, I understand the theory behind the game. And when I watched that game, all I kept saying was, everybody's playing forward. Nobody's playing backward. And until you make them step backwards, you know, nothing works. You don't, but they won't bite on a down and up. They don't bite on a double move. It's just never going to work. But you're right. A lot of it's not going to work because the offensive line is just not that good. But you got to help everybody out by doing that. And that's the problem. But I don't know.
I just think it's going to be a long season for both these teams.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing. Yeah.
And unfortunately for the Giants side of it, the learning experience isn't going to translate the same way it is for the Jets experience because the Jets are a younger team. But the Giants, you know, they do have a veteran quarterback, but it doesn't matter who you got back there as a quarterback. If that line ain't giving you protection, it doesn't really matter. And that's, to me, the position that the Giants are in. The Jets, everything is a learning experience for them. If they actually learn, and I'm talking from the field to the coaching staff, and they learn from every play, they could become better as the season goes on. I personally, after four games, I don't see it. They're heading for a 4-12 season at the rate they're going, if they're lucky. But I just think that there's more of an upside because the players we're talking about are younger. You have a lot of younger players, but with an aging, a bad line and an aging quarterback, that's a lot to fill. And I don't know what is their salary cap situation. Do you know what it is?
I don't think it's good after next year. I mean, the truth is, team and going to be a bad team next year, they may have to make a decision to cut Eli or get him to take a drastic pay cut because he's going to eat up $21 million of their cap next year. So this is a big season for the Giants and Eli. They will not have a lot of money to spend. They'll have a lot of their stuff set up, but they'll have to make some serious changes or get Eli to take a big cut in pay to give them some flexibility. So we'll see. I'm not giving up on this season. I still believe that they could, because that division's so bad, they could make a run at let's say, right now, I've changed my tune to say I'm going for a 500 season, but it's going to have to be a dramatic change right now. So I got to see better this year. I just need to see the team get better so that next year, a couple pieces, it's fine. If this team, like you said, Jeff, if this team wins 3 or 4 games this year, we're in big trouble. We're going to be in very big trouble right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think both teams are in trouble. It's just that the Jets have a little bit more of an upside because of the youth and everything on their side.
Yep.
I'm not saying they're that much better off than the Giants, please don't get me wrong, but there's just something about them. But, if we keep talking about this, we ain't going to have anything to talk about for Thursday. So I don't know if you're in ready to start wrapping this up now.
Yes, I think we should wrap it up. We're about an hour and 40 minutes in. So I'll start the goodbyes. Guys, remember tomorrow night is Pastor Mike Show, Mike Passamonte and Carl Graham from 6 to 8 here on the Hard Sports, the Hard Rocket Sports Channel. Please tune in to Mike and Carl. They do a fantastic job. Thursday night, the mothership returns. Jeff and I back for Thursday night, 6:30 to 9:30, doing the best of hard rock, heavy metal, and, of course, the world of sports. We'll talk more football preview week 5 in the NFL coming at you. We got plenty to get to. We'll be back next Tuesday night when Jeff grabs the reins again. Again, we're sorry we went an hour and 40 minutes for an hour show, but this is how it gets. And I love it, and I could go all night with this, but we'll end it here. Big thanks to everybody out there for all of their help. A big thanks to the people who are listening. I'm texting and Facebooking with a few people who are actually listening to us right now, and thank you for doing that. And, again, we'll be back next Tuesday night with the recap of the Week 5 in the NFL. Guys, Week 4 and Week 5, to me, are two of the biggest weeks in the NFL. You start to find out who everybody is. Okay, and we're starting to see it, and we're starting to see some storylines develop. So stay tuned for Hard Rocket Sports. We'll keep bringing those storylines. And, you know, I'll just say on behalf of Jeff Towinski, myself, and everybody here at Hard Rocket Sports, we thank you for listening. We thank you for paying attention to us. Check out HardRocketSports.com. Big thanks to RFL Records. I met with them this Friday. The Live Say new album, Kick Self, Good Chronicles. So check out the RFLRecords.com for more information on that, all the bands. And, again, thanks to everybody who's paying attention. Jeff, I'll give you the it's your show. I'll give you the last words.
Other than goodbye, there's nothing else I can do on this side. You know where you've got to go, man. You got the button right there.
Stage is that moose, you know. And
so when you're playing, you feel like a preserved moose on stage.
Yeah.
Yes, we do at this point. But, guys, again, have a great couple of days. We'll see you back here Thursday night for the regular Hard Rocket Sports Show. And, again, from Jeff Towinski, myself, and everybody here at Hard Rocket Sports, we say have a great night. Have a good day tomorrow. We'll see you on Thursday night. Everybody enjoy yourselves, and thanks for listening. Jeff, my brother, have a good one. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Had a good show, man. Enjoyed it. And, yes, we will talk tomorrow.
You got it, man. Good night, everybody.
Later.